Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 44. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffey with me. We're home in Las Vegas. It's UFC on Fox 18 this week, but we are not in New Jersey. Instead, Cole Coffey, I've got shorts on, a slight little jacket here that I put on just so I didn't look silly, and got a frosty beverage. Listen, I hate missing the UFC card, but I'm just going to say I think we made the right choice. It's cold up there.
It is cold up there, and I'll take this weather anytime. Like today, it was nice. I mean, I was driving down the road, saw a couple people, had T-shirts on or whatever, you know, and definitely. I mean, granted, you wear shorts in subarctic fucking temperatures, but it's not too bad here. But, yeah, I'm as much as we enjoy the Jersey area, you know, I didn't mind missing this one.
Oh, dude, the last time I was in New Jersey, I had a wreck with a rental car.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing, man. It was back when Rick Lee was still actually a part of the team, and it was me and Rick and, gosh, was Matt with us? There was somebody else. I think it might have been Matt Erickson. But, yeah, we were driving, and there was a spare tire in the middle of the road, basically, and I had to swerve. It was just the craziest thing. I ended up hitting the spare tire that it was laying on the road. I didn't see it until late, so I swerved to miss it, but it clipped the front of the bumper. It was like $700 worth of damage. Oh, and then, you know, the rental car company, they jack you up because they hit you with the loss of use charge.
Did you not get any of the insurance things?
Nah, I didn't get the extra stuff. Yeah. Which they tell us – I think they tell us not to at Gannett. Like, I think we're not supposed to pay for the extra stuff.
Same thing with, like, the UFC, they used to say, because they have their own coverage that covers their people or whatever. Yeah. So I guess that's fine. But, yeah, typical, you know, person, it's good to get it just for one of those things, even though I don't think I've ever been in a rental – you know, dust up or whatever, but you know, it sucks that it happens.
Only time.
I'm sure there were some Jersey people that are pissed off you for hitting their tire that they perfectly placed in the road. I got a story for Jersey. One of the times we went there with the UFC, it was like probably one of the first times I went to Jersey, and we're in the airport, you know, and of course there's people that you've seen when the UFC staff comes there. You got a driver or some sort of driving company that's waiting to take the people, and they'll lead you to the car, they load your luggage up or whatever. So we're heading out to this vehicle, and I think it was maybe me, Fiasco, and maybe one other guy getting in the black SUV, and we're kind of going. And at the same time, we're loading our shit into the SUV. Another guy gets into his car next to it. You know, he's pulling his car to stuff over a Jersey guy. And as we're in the car and we see our driver kind of shut his – or he was already, I think, done. I think he was in the front seat, you know, was calling in to say whatever. And I see the guy next door finish putting his shit in his car. But rather than just take the cart and move it off the side, he takes it and puts it straight the fuck behind our car so that we couldn't move. And so then he backs his thing out and go, and we're just like, what the fuck, you know? So our driver, at the point where he starts to see the guy do this, he kind of gives one of these things. The guy that put the cart behind flips us off and fucking drives away. I was like, are you serious?
Welcome to Jersey.
Welcome to Jersey. And at that point, I was just like, fuck this place.
I'm
a Jersey salute. We got a Jersey salute.
I'm not a huge Newark, New Jersey fan especially. The rest of New Jersey's okay. Atlantic City's not exactly Las Vegas, but it's Atlantic City. There's other places, but Newark, I am not a big fan of, and so that's why I was happy to say I'm out. I'm not interested in covering this card. You guys go handle that one. I was really thinking I don't think there's too many cards. Like, I was trying to think of a fight that the UFC could put on where I'd be like, dude, that fight's so big, I have to go to Newark for that fight. Yeah. And I don't think there is one. I'm just not a fan. And then they end up doing, you know, like media stuff in New York, which totally understand. They're trying to, you know, New York, media capital of the world or what have you. You're trying to get it legalized there. But then you got to go back and forth between New York and New Jersey every day. And again, it's freaking cold. It's not like they go – for some reason, they don't go up there in the summer, you know, when it might be warm. They go up there in winter. I'm glad we're not there, man. I'm glad we're right here in your living room with a couple of award-winning – PBRs established in Milwaukee, 1844.
It's certainly a little bit better than trying to carry gear on those fucking train systems, which actually the train systems do run pretty swell that they got going from Jersey into the city. But yeah, I remember that's just a fucking clusterfuck, trying to carry tripods, camera gear, and you're working down the alley and you got people trying to rush through, and then you know, then you get the attitudes and you're just like, fuck,
it's not good. It's not fun at all. I think when I had that rental car accident, you know, I think it was like seven, I think I ended up paying that out of my pocket because I was like too embarrassed to turn into the company.
Oh geez,
Bob was afraid to turn in. I paid like $700 out of pocket.
Ouch.
F you, New Jersey. So,
but all the listeners that are from
in New Jersey, you're cool.
You're fucking cool. You're, cool, you're one of the good ones. You can flip us off. It's all right.
I've had some good times in Jersey, man.
Yeah,
just
the
Newark,
sure.
Newark is not, especially just right around the arena and walking around. There's not a lot to do at night. It's just not a good area. I'm not a fan. But it is a good card. Matt Erickson, Justin Parker up there. UFC on Fox 18 Saturday night. Anthony Johnson versus Ryan Bader in the main event. Josh Barnett and Ben Rothwell, who were much in the news in the co-main event. Jimmy Rivera, who I've become a little fan of as of late. I like that guy. He's against Yuri Alcantara. And then Brian Barberina, Sage Northcutt. Kind of a lighter schedule. It kind of feels to me like the hype isn't really built around this card. Like it kind of just flew under the radar. And part of that was, I think, it was just a really, really light media schedule, man. They didn't do anything until today. And even when they did it today, it was just the main event and the co-main event. And then Sage Northcutt and Randy Brown. So six fighters in total at the open workouts today. I think the UFC, number one, again, it's just difficult operationally to do stuff around there. I think they were just trying to keep things down because it's tough. It's tough getting around. It's tough doing stuff up there.
Yeah, it's expensive. Expensive trying to move around. You know, if you can't take a train to where you're at or whatever, it's such a hassle. And so I think they probably made the right decision. But also, too, you know, I know there's been events where, you know, if they did something inside Newark, there was absolutely nobody around except for whatever sparse media happened to show up. So, you know, they know what they're doing. So, you know, rather than plan multiple things and have there be two empty, you know, events, you know, they kind of do the one thing and then hope that most of the media and the crowd come out for that one. But, yeah, I mean, with how that East Coast and whatnot's been dealing with the weather and everything lately, I was grateful to be out here in the desert with
That's
the sunshine
right.
and, you know, but I hope I'm sure it's going to be a great card, and I'm hopefully Justin and old Matt Erickson have a good time over there this week.
Well, if you saw today the open workouts, I guess probably if you had to name some stars, the open workouts, Josh Barnett put on a full professional wrestling routine. It's something that he's done before, and it's fun to watch. I'm not a big pro wrestling guy. But it's fun to watch him. You know, he does have roots in pro wrestling and is a big, big fan of it. He does commentary on Access TV with New Japan Pro Wrestling. I mean, the guy really is a big pro wrestling fanatic and aficionado. So, you know, he's going in there and having fun and doing a good job with it. It's fun to do that too because it really breaks up the monotony of an open workout session. You're assuming it's just going to be, you know, your standard hip pads, you know, do a little bit of jiu-jitsu and then talk real quickly. But he went in there and put on a full match and cut a promo at the end of it. So that was pretty fantastic.
Nice.
But the other man is Sage Northcutt. The guy, whether he means to take the spotlight or not, when he's around, he does take the spotlight. 19 years old. Already fighting in his third UFC fight. Cole Coffey, you've been around the guy a little bit. What's your take on Sage Northcutt?
Well, thank you, sir. I'm glad you asked me that question. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, I mean, good on this kid, man. He's about as uber polite as anything. I've never heard anybody say, you know, anything wrong about the kid. I think, you know, most people would feel like a jerk to say, like, God, the kid's too nice or the kid's whatever, you know. But he's super, super nice. I think he's just, you know, one of these nice religious kids or whatever, but he's fucking chiseled from granite, you know. And but, no, he's exciting. I mean, I have good hopes for the kid. I hope he pans out, man. I know a lot of times they push these people just like when they did with Paige, you know. They were – you know, kind of giving her a little fluff deals, and they threw her to the wolves, and then we really got to see that she wasn't quite there yet. So, but I think, you know, Sage, he's shown moments where I think he can be very good. I don't think he's there yet. I think he's still a young kid, and he's got some ways to go. You know, obviously from a guy like myself, which has no experience in the ring, but, you know, he has that set almost like just like he's I don't want to say naive isn't the right word, but he's so raw and like not pure or something, but he's just like he just seems like he hasn't you get this feeling like he hasn't seen the world, and you almost don't want to see it happen in front of you. He seems like such a nice kid. I don't want to see that shattered yet.
I know it's funny. I'm a fan of the kid. I really am. He does have some haters, but I like the guy, man. He's 7-0 as a professional. All seven of his wins have come by way of a finish. He's spectacular in the way he moves. He's quick. He's agile. He's creative with his movements. I mean, I think there's everything there that you want to see. He's just 19 years old, which is incredible to think about.
Yeah.
But you are right.
Fights at that age.
Oh, it's nuts. But you are right. I mean, there's some. At the risk of sounding like a little bit of a dick, there's something a little off about him. Like, there's something weird. Like, it just doesn't seem normal. But I do think this, too. Like, when I was 19 years old, and I definitely, of course I looked like Sage Northcutt with my chiseled frame and all. But I was,
we all did.
Because we all did at 19. Yeah, I definitely did look like that. But I didn't talk like that. I mean, I grew up a little bit rougher than Sage Northcutt has. But, you know, I do think, like, you know, what if somebody was interviewing me at 19 years old? Like, what the hell would I have to say at 19 years old?
Yeah.
So I feel kind of bad for him when we're sitting there having these scrums and asking him all these questions. But it's fascinating because the guy is just different, man. The way he sees things, the way he talks about things. And, yes, I do laugh at him a little bit because it does seem like no matter what you say, yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for asking that. That's the greatest question I've heard.
It's a trip, man. It's a trip. But I like the guy, and it's funny because the criticism that I've always heard over the USC over the past couple years is just that, oh, they don't do a very good job of building stars, man. They don't do a very good job of building stars. So then they get something like this, which this guy's – he's unique. He's different.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a teenager. He's this – you know, got this enthusiastic personality, and he can fight. And now I see the complaint is, why are they shoving this guy down our throat?
Yeah.
Why – what the hell are you supposed to do?
There's no win. Good if you do and bad if you don't.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't get it. I mean, you've got to put the guy out there, right,
yeah,
in order to build a star.
I mean, when you look at – I mean, he's the perfect – I don't want to say the perfect kid. You know, like I'm jerking him off or whatever. But it's like he doesn't do shit wrong. He doesn't talk bad about people. He shows up on time. He's polite. He does what they ask. I mean, if there's a person that you want to represent your company – This is the kind of kid that you want to promote. This is the kid you want to push forward. And the fact that he goes out there and he wins, it just says so much to the kid. And you want him to go. The fact that he's still so young and he has a lot of promise. I mean, I think the thing about being 19 is he hasn't even hit, like, maybe that last, like, growth spurt. He might still be growing into his frame. I mean, like – who knows where he's gonna see his body in two or three more years, and you know, three more years of doing this. I mean, who knows? I mean, but yeah, people are gonna fucking hate, and if you're just hating just because of the fact that the kid's nice and you think like, oh, that's not real, it's like, ah, just fucking grow up. I mean, like we've all went through shit. I'm the same way, like what you said. When I was 19, I was a fucking shithead.
Chiseled, of course, like Sage Northcutt.
A lot more so than now, that's for sure. But just like, you know, when you're 19, you're right. I mean, like, what the fuck can you say? And I think the fact that the kid's been fighting, he's been so focused on that, he probably doesn't have the stories that a lot of the rest of us had, but he's been so focused. And I think that's what I also kind of like, is that he had the presence of mind to have so much focus in one thing. He found his calling,
yeah,
at such a young age. So it's wonderful to see where he possibly can go. And he's nice, he's polite, good-looking kid. Why not fucking push him out there?
I mean, I guess if you are going to hate on him, and especially if you're a UFC fighter, now from the outside looking in, I don't know if you can have this, but if you're a fellow UFC fighter, I mean, the fact that he did get $80,000 in his last fight,
yeah,
I mean, that was a little bit shocking to me.
That was really shocking.
But it was funny because Scott Coker, Bellator president, he was on MMA Junkie Radio today, and they were talking to him about, like, free agents and who he's going after. And he had this quote, and I'm going to read it, that I thought made a lot of sense. It said, and he was talking about the fact that they're going to pursue some of these guys, you know, Benson Henderson, Matt Mitrione, Aljamain Sterling, but, you know, it has to make sense for the organization. And the quote was, "The fighters are judged by this measuring stick. Can you move the rating needle, and can you draw in the attendance? Free agents want a lot of money, but they need to deliver ratings for us. I'm not sure every free agent out there has that right now." And while that he wasn't talking about Sage Northcutt, it just kind of spoke to me about, I mean, Sage, again, love him or hate him, it seems like everybody has an opinion on him. Even at just 19 years old, even just two fights into his career, I mean, it seems like people have an opinion on him. And I don't mean any offense to Brian Barberina, who he's fighting this weekend, to Cody Fister, who he fought, you know, back in December, or to Francisco Trevino, who we fought in October. Does anybody have an opinion on those guys, love them or hate them? I don't think so. I just don't think people know him. Yet this guy they know, so maybe he is worth that 80 grand.
Well, true, and I guess the other side, and I could see where maybe the fighters that you mentioned are on the other side, whereas this kid, I think a lot of people, they know him and they're doing whatever, it's because they have been throwing him out there. So there's, it's like that catch 22. Well, yeah, maybe if they would have thrown me out, people would know, and then maybe I would get the thing, you know. And there's no right, there's no wrong or whatever, but I mean, you know, the kid, he is performing, he's doing it. You know, it's unfortunate maybe that some fighters aren't given that, you know, unfortunate, they can't push everybody up equally. It's unfortunate, you know, because then nobody really stands out. And I think that they're looking for superstars. You know, the GSPs are gone. The Silva, you know, Anderson, he's still fighting, but he's lost so much luster. People don't feel like that. I mean, like, there's a changing of the guard that happens every once in a while, you know, and they need to have people, because it's the names that people hook onto that build the sport and keep people going. If there was no Rousey right now, if there was no Conor McGregor, the UFC would get, you know, a fraction of the attention that it gets now. So they realize that the fact that it's names and faces like of these superstars is what people remember. You know, even in Brazil, a lot of people are, you know, it's not so much that they love MMA, they love the UFC.
That's right.
They love the brand, they love certain fighters. And that's what, if anything, I think the UFC has learned, is the fact that it's superstars and the new superstars that are going to carry it and keep the sport growing, keep the popularity going. And if you can't possibly put all those dollars that they have behind every single person, you got to kind of pick and choose. And I think by doing that, you're going to have fighters saying, like, fuck that, you know, I'd be big too if you did it. Put me up against a guy. And that's, if anything, one way, you know. It's kind of, for these guys like Sage, it's like, hey, yeah, they're pushing me out, I'm doing whatever, but it's also painting a target on your back.
Yep.
So they're doing your favors, but they're not doing your favors. But the fact that his pay, that blew my mind. 80? I would have been surprised if he was getting 40.
Right. Instead, he was getting 40 to show and 40 to win.
You know.
Amazing.
So.
Well, he is in the spotlight. He will be fighting on Fox. The guy went from fighting on UFC Fight Pass to fighting on Fox Sports 1 to now fighting on Big Fox in three consecutive fights. He's still just 19 years old. It's crazy. So I had to just play this audio. We had our team up there in New Jersey, and I listened to the scrum. And I'm sorry, you can't take a bit and a piece from it. You just got to listen to the whole thing. Sage Northcutt is
thank you.
He is one interesting dude, man, he talks about dealing with haters and what he's had to deal with and still being so young and growing up. I mean, the guy still is a college student. I think he's ultimately going to put that on hold. He won't say it yet, but every time he kind of hesitates, and I think he's going to put that on hold. I think he realizes, dude, like, college is always going to be there, man. You got to strike while the iron's hot when you're talking about an athletic career.
Yeah, and I mean, 19, what does that mean? He's a sophomore, maybe?
Yeah.
At this point, I mean, he's just started. I mean, he got past the freshman, even though, how balling would that be? Your freshman or your sophomore year, and you're like fucking going down. He's probably still forced to live in the fucking dorms, and the dude's a UFC fighter making 80 grand. They're like, yeah, let's party in that dude's room.
I'm sure he got, I'm sure he may have gotten a little bit of notice. I mean, he got a little bit of that. Hey, man, I don't know. I think he's still a virgin, dog. He's saving himself for marriage. He's perfect. He's super.
He's super, man.
All right, well, while we refresh on these award-winning Frosty Cold Beverages, you got to just listen to Sage Northcutt, because the dude is just – he's something different, man, and that's it. He's something different. And in this world where there's fights every weekend – hell, there's three fights tonight when this card releases – or this podcast releases. There's ONE FC, there's Victory, there's Bellator all on the same night. You got to do something to get yourself noticed. And I don't know if it's the spiky hair and the frosted tips or just the aw shucks attitude. I mean, Sage Northcutt is making an impression. And, man, Cole Coffey, you brought it up. The Paige VanZant hype train, man, that came to a screeching halt. And yeah. I think, you know, she learned her lesson from that, and I think she's going to come back stronger. But, you know, we'll see when Sage Northcutt gets there as well. But that's still a little bit down the road. Maybe Brian Barberino will be the guy to put a halt to it. Odds makers don't think so. They got Sage Northcutt as a 3-1 favorite. But if nothing else, just sit back and enjoy the uniqueness of Super Sage Northcutt.
Absolutely not. It's more and more fun. What do you think of Josh's performance prior to you?
Oh, that was killer. That was so cool. Like some WWE wrestling out there, but he's the real deal, so that was awesome.
I saw you took a picture with him at the hotel, and it's interesting to see you. You're so young, you're about to start your career. He's kind of, you know, at the tail end, still very much relevant though. Did you ask him for any advice? Did he tell you any stories? Did he say anything to you?
It was actually right before we came down here for the open workouts, and he's actually a friend of mine, my chiropractor actually, so that was pretty cool, and he's a super nice guy, so we're just kind of talking, hanging out before we came here.
Is it difficult from going a year ago to you just had a Facebook page and you lived your life to 1 year later, now some guy named Chuck who you've never met is like, fuck that guy. Is it difficult dealing with the good publicity, the bad publicity, all the people in general?
I don't think it's difficult. I actually think it's kind of funny too. So a lot of times, anything that someone tries to say negative is actually kind of funny. And I really don't listen to any of the negative stuff. So anything that's positive, that's kind of the stuff I'm listening to. And that's kind of like what brings you up. So there's always a positive side, there's always a negative side. But you can choose which one to listen to.
Is it harder to stay focused now compared to then when you have more obligations?
It might be a little bit harder to focus. Not really much in the aspect of focusing. I'm always focused. But hard to fit it all in. So sure, you have more... more people that are trying to talk to you, more fans and stuff that you can try to communicate with on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, stuff like that. And it's hard to reach out and talk to all of your fans, people like that. So that's a little bit more difficult.
Are you the kind of guy who reads the comments on Twitter and Instagram and things like that? Do you respond to a lot of people?
I definitely try to respond to people and as much people as I possibly can. Now the negative stuff, I never try to read that. A lot of it, if I happen to see one or so, I'm kind of like, that's kind of funny. But other than that, I always try to reach out there and talk to as many people as I can and get to communicate with them.
Has there been any comment that got to you? You're like, whoa, that was actually really mean. Like, what's this person talking about?
No, not really. I tried to think of that, so I can't really name any, but I'm sure there's some out there.
Have you received any strange requests from any fans? Anyone throw anything your way?
No, not too much. Someone asked me for my underwear. not too much. It's actually a lot of fun, and everybody seems to be, like, everybody that I seem to see and that are commenting, they all seem to be pretty nice, real friendly.
How much do you weigh right now?
So, actually, I was going to fight lightweight 155. Yeah. Just a few days ago, I had pretty much dieted down all my weight and was ready to make weight. So now I'm fighting welterweight, to come to find out, just a few days ago. So now I'm eating my way back up, getting my weight back. And I haven't weighed recently. I haven't weighed in the past day or so. So I'm not sure how much I weigh exactly, but I know I've definitely got to be a lot stronger, a lot bigger.
Is it possible you might weigh under 170?
Oh, that would have been a possibility, I guess, if the weigh-ins were yesterday.
Right.
But now I'm probably going to weigh... way above there. I should be strong. And then any future fights at welterweight, let's say, if I have another fight at welterweight after this, I know I'll get to put on more muscle than I ever had before. I'll get to be stronger, faster, quicker, and be the best fighter that I've been so far.
Was there any hesitation to taking the welterweight fight on late notice like that?
No, sir. No hesitation. I know I had pretty much cut down all the weight and cut back the amount of food that I was eating to make weight at 155. But it's a last minute thing. You have about a week to, once I found out my opponent broke his foot. So you only have a certain number of people that are even able to fight, get their medicals done within a week, and get to be able to come over here to New Jersey to fight, if that makes sense. So fighting at welterweight, that's good for me. I feel great. I feel strong.
Is your body difficult to adjust? Like, you feel really fast once, and then a week later you feel really strong. Or do you find a happy medium, or does it just transition for you?
I think I'm going to feel faster and stronger. So a lot of people think that they're going to gain some weight and they'll be like kind of sluggish. But for me, I guess it's kind of optimum. So like me gaining the extra weight will make me faster, make me stronger, make me feel better, make my muscles more endurance, if that makes sense. So overall, I should feel better.
And how do you put on the weight? Do you just go to Cheesecake Factory, or do you start eating bread, or what do you do to put it back on?
I really like pizza. I'm just kidding. But I do like pizza. But I always eat pretty healthy food. So real lean, like hamburger, chicken, whatever it might be, and put it on that way with the fluids too.
You've been on Fight Pass and you're happy to be on there. Now what do you think about being on this other platform, Fox?
Both Fight Pass and Fox are awesome. So Fight Pass, you can plug in your computer to the TV, you can pull it up anywhere pretty much you want on your computer, and you can watch it from right there. So that's super cool. I have all my friends and family that tune in and watch it. But then Fox is awesome too, because so many people around the world can tune in on Fox. So they're both awesome, both incredible, and it's just an honor to even be here fighting for the UFC so soon.
how much did you know about Barbarina before you were offered him, and how much have you looked into him now?
So really, I didn't know anything about my opponent, Barbarina, before I was offered him, and then that's who I got matched up with. I still really don't know much about my opponent. I know that he was going to fight a fight coming up 2 to 3 weeks after this one, January 30th. That's what I've heard, but he decided that he's going to fight on this one instead. So he's my opponent now, and that's pretty much all I know.
It feels like the last two opponents that you had, they've all said, oh, I'm going to be the one to stop the Sage Northcutt hype train, and he has a hashtag out there to that extent as well. Does that stuff make you laugh? I'm guessing it does. Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
You had said before you kind of want to get as many fights in as you can and kind of get a sense of where you are maybe in your career and then decide on school. Is that still kind of your plan right now?
It definitely is. So I'm still taking the minimum of number of classes right now, just as I was last semester. The semester actually just started back up because we had Christmas break. So just a few days ago before I came down here, school started back up, and now I'm back in school. So I'm still enrolled as an engineer at Texas A&M, but I'm still focusing on the fighting right now.
Would it just be like a matter of how quickly your career kind of takes off to decide, you know, if you're gonna just do it full time, or is there like a something that'll decide that for you?
Really, I'm trying to do both at the same time. Just right now, the engineering is so hard to get into, if that makes sense. Especially for Texas A&M, it's the number one school in the nation, I believe, for petroleum engineering.
Will Faraz be in your corner again?
Yes, sir. Faraz will be. Mr. Zahavi will be in my corner again.
But you didn't train in Montreal, right?
No, sir. I will be going back there. It looks like after this fight, train there for a little bit. Also, while I'm doing school, back and forth. But yes, sir, he's going to be inside my corner.
And you were just with Dana and Matt Serra and Nick Tooth, right? They were filming around you. What did you guys do together, and what was it like now being sort of an alum of the show, being back with them?
Oh, that was crazy. They're the three bravest guys I've pretty much ever met in my life. So I don't want to tell you what happened, but they went bull riding.
Oh.
That's all I can say. They went bull riding. I'm not going to tell you what happened, but it was insane. So if you can tune in and watch the show, you're going to freak out.
And now there's a new Sage Northcutt. His name is Randy Brown. He's following in your footsteps. What advice would you give to him as he makes his debut after being chosen on the show?
That's awesome. He's doing a great job. And I would say take one fight at a time. And you obviously don't want to jump right away. Obviously, you have to have the privilege to be able to work your way up. And I think working your way up one fight at a time, learning as a fighter, and getting the experience with the UFC, that's very important.
Where do you think, you're with your family and everything, where do you think the future of traditional martial arts are? Because it seems like you come from a traditional background and then expanded in, and then you get these guys who just day one train at a UFC gym and they kind of don't get really good at one thing, but okay at a lot. Where do you see the future of that going? You think it'll die off, or people will stay one and expand?
You know, the sport is always changing. So the sport of MMA, it's always increasing. The level of everything's getting better. But you have to be well-rounded. So if you can have each style of martial arts, that's best. That's optimum. If you just have one style, if someone shuts down that one style, then what do you go to from there? If you're just a wrestler and your wrestling gets shut down, then what happens when you have elbows, knees, kicks, every single thing you can think of? So each individual style of the martial arts is very important. If it's karate, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, whatever it might be.
And are you looking at all these other gyms and thinking, ooh, I can learn that if I go to Craig Jackson or Faraz or Randy Couture? Do you look at that and think, maybe I should pick up a little there, or you're happy with where you're going now?
You always want to pick up from what you watch and what you see. So that's how people learn. They have to not only try the moves, but you also learn by watching moves too. So obviously, if you see something, you can pick up from that. But I'm happy with the people that I train with right now, and they're all great.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Super Sage Northcutt, the one and only. I'm telling you, maybe you hate him. I like him. I like this kid. I don't know how often he can keep fighting, man. The guy's just racking him up one after the other, but I'm down, man. Sign me up. I'm a fan of the kid, and, you know, I don't know if he's going to be a champion or anything like that, but I like his style. I like his swagger. I like the way he fights, and, man, you know, we've been talking about for a long time, these kids that have grown up, you know, training and everything, wanting to do it. You know, this guy, when he was 9 years old, said he wanted to be in the UFC, and 10 years later, here he is. That's awesome. You know, the fact that we have this generation of people, that's exciting to me. So I'm down for it. So,
and that's kind of what people have been talking about. You know, Now you just kind of made me really think about it. Like this kid, 9 years old, that had the UFC around to say, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
You know, before it was like kids looking at the NBA. Oh, I want to be in the NBA. Or looking at NFL. I want to be in the NFL. I want to do this and that. Now we're reaping the benefits of these kids that have grown up with the UFC being around.
Yep.
You know, and have chosen that to be their primary sport. Which is amazing because these kids are so much further along. That's what all the old timers are like, fuck, if I was like this kid was and started doing this, you know. So these kids aren't just, you know, picking up whatever and taking a Taekwondo class and then 10 years later deciding to get into MMA. They're starting out in MMA at a super young age. So by the time he's 10 years, he's been in the sport, he's been doing MMA, and it's incredible.
It's awesome. That's why I embrace it. I mean, again, it's you know, kind of a unique situation. The kid is a unique guy, and I can understand why some people might not like his personality, but I'm excited because that's that generation of people that we've been talking about for years, and they're here. So
yep, it's the first generation.
Well, as always, thanks for listening to us, guys. Of course, you can download every show on the MMAroadshow.com. You can follow us on Twitter at MMAJunkieJohn, at Ken S. Hathaway, Instagram at the MMA Roadshow. Follow us there. Of course, if you're listening to us on iTunes, make sure you hit us up with those ratings and reviews. We always like to hear the feedback. We're nearing a year, man. Episode
it's
number 44.
Crazy.
We're nearing a year.
I love it.
It's been making some progress. You know, we've been experimenting, playing with it, trying to figure out how we want to handle it, what we want to do. We're just learning on the fly. We're no professionals, man. We're just out there hanging, having some frosty beverages like the ones that have been newly delivered along with these smaller glasses of a brownish-colored liquid. Oh, Bushmills. Oh, let's just get into it. So much for that. I was trying
to be
casual about it, but okay, it's whiskey. but hey, it's been a year. So it's time to start figuring out what we can do with this bad boy. You know, it wouldn't be bad to make a little money doing it. You know, just put a little something to. I got school to pay for over kids and stuff
you got kids, we got bills, I got a cat to feed.
Yeah, man. I mean, we'd still be sitting here talking about MMA and drinking either way, so
yeah.
But if we can make some money for it, might as well. So if you like the show and you can help us, I mean, we'd appreciate that. We're not asking you to pay for it.
Yeah, right.
We're just asking you to, you know, give us some feedback and help us grow it so that somebody else can pay for it.
Yeah, I have enjoyed the reviews and that people have said, and even the feedback, you know, from the longtime listeners. You know, I love when people chime in and say, "Oh, hey, can you try to do this? Can you do this?" I mean, because we'll say something during a fucking podcast. We'll have a couple beers and we forget all about
it.
But then somebody will bring it up and it's like, "Oh, fuck, you're right. Thank you very much for saying that." You know, and that's what. So I love the fact that the guys that. Are listening on it. They're going to Facebook saying shit. They're going on Twitter saying shit. They're going on to iTunes, and I love reading the reviews. And I mean, it makes me proud that, you know, here we are coming up almost on like a year, you know, and going and seeing people comment on that. And now I can, you know, show it to friends or family and say, this is something, you know, we're trying to build, something we're trying to grow. You know, I was playing with my Apple TV the other day and I found that there's a podcast app on it.
Yeah, you can pull up the podcast on Apple TV.
And I can pull up the podcast there, and I about shit myself. I was very happy and proud. I was like, fuck, there we are, you know? So, it's been a fun ride, you know, and you know, you definitely, I feel the momentum. I feel the people listening to it and putting their two cents. And if anything, this is your guys' podcast as well. So, I mean, give your thoughts, give your ideas, give your feedback. I mean, we try to do as much as we can and incorporate what we can. And, you know, I still love the idea when somebody suggested we do a live show. And I think that's still sort of maybe the plan. So we'll get to, you know, try to get that for some of the big events, you know, where we can try to get it together. And, you know, this will always happen, but, you know, the live one would be fun too. And anything that we can do where we hang out with people. So I love when people come out when we're in their town, want to have drinks,
sure,
you know, and, you know, even if I'm not there, I know that somebody's there doing my part by buying you drinks or and sharing some drinks with you. And ultimately it's those good times, those stories, those memories, which is what helps make life a little more interesting.
It does, man.
And make all the trips and the times on the road that much easier.
It does make the time away from family that much easier, that's for sure. So definitely hit us up when we're in your town. Yeah, speaking of the hardcores and the ones that listen a lot, the astute listeners of the MMA Roadshow will notice during that last scrum that we played with Sage Northcutt, you did not hear Matt Erickson, even though he's in New Jersey. That is because Matt was actually at a special lunch with UFC President Dana White that was not covered by most of the media, but he was there, did pick up some video and some audio there. Now, it was mostly centered around looking for a fight. That's what they was there to promote. But look for that on Friday. Of course, we drop this new podcast episode every Friday is when they come out. And so by the time you're listening to this, this video should be online. Yeah. But look for that.
Look for it later today when you're listening.
Or now. Whatever. listen, it has been a crazy week, all centered around UFC 196, UFC Fight Night 82. The past week was kind of crazy. You and I both went to L.A. on separate days. Last week, of course, you went the day of the podcast last week, Thursday night when we record. You went to see Fabricio Werdum. And then, of course, I went to see Josh Barnett. And the heavyweight division has been just crazy. Everything that was shaken up, you know, we had seen Cain Velasquez in San Jose a couple weeks earlier as well. Everything kind of going on around 196, what is now actually called UFC Fight Night 82.
Yeah, it's not 196 anymore.
Lost the main event. Man, first of all, let's just talk about what happened because I think there is some confusion over how it all went down. And you sat there at lunch last week with Thursday with Fabricio Werdum. Guy never said a word. Guy sounded like he was in good spirits. I mean, at that time, we just touched on it briefly last week because you had really just gotten back in town when we recorded the podcast. We hadn't really had time to process the audio, the video, all that stuff yet. But, I mean, did you get any indication that there was anything bizarre or perhaps not good going on?
No. If anything, I thought it was probably the most relaxed, most open, most jovial Fabricio. I mean, it was probably – he was joking around with everybody. He looked – great. I mean, he looked in shape. I mean, he was eating, had a nice healthy appetite, you know. He looked in shape, made no mention about any soreness or any whatever, you know. There was nothing that made me think that there was anything going on. He was focused. He was talking so much about Cain and what he was expecting Cain to bring, and you know, for things to kind of play out. And it's funny, you know, because I went back and listened to the interview again today to try to see if there was any little bits, and there was nothing that would give me pause to think that the fight wouldn't happen.
Right. Well, it's not. It started out with Cain Velasquez pulling out. He had a back injury, found out today. It's a back injury that's probably going to require some type of a minor surgery on a disc. Should keep him out about 4 weeks, according to UFC President Dana White. Got to feel bad for Cain Velasquez. The guy has fought six times in 5 years. I mean, that's just terrible. You think about the amount of money that he's left on the table and the amount of just of his athletic prime that he left behind. Not only is it 5 years, but it was the 5 years from age 28 to he's now 33.
Wow.
And that's generally what you consider very, very much athletic prime years. And he fought five or six times in those 5 years. I mean, the first thing when he pulled out, man, your heart just kind of goes out for the guy, man. Here's somebody that a lot of people believe had the skills and the talent to be considered the greatest heavyweight of all time. And I don't think he has enough time left in the sport now to build himself back to that reputation.
He's definitely fighting himself out of a hole, that's for sure. I mean, I think with the momentum that he had and, you know, with everybody talking about him, he was, like, untouchable. You know, I mean, he had so much momentum. I think, you know, after losing and then fighting, you know, with those injuries, I think besides the fact of being away from it, I think that's got to sink into his head as well. And he's got to start having some self-doubt of whether is this the right thing to keep doing? Because obviously it's almost got to be thinking like his body's saying, maybe this isn't it. Maybe this isn't what you need to do. And at that point, you got to start thinking, well, fuck, what else do I do? I've been giving some of the best years of his life to this thing, and I'm not saying he's done by any means, but you know,
no, I mean,
you got to start thinking about that.
Especially the heavyweight division, you can fight to an older age, but yeah, don't. I mean, you got to be having some second guesses about yourself and just thinking like, dude, maybe this. I don't want to say maybe it's not for me. I mean, you were the damn champion of the world, but
right.
You do think, how much longer can I put my body through this? I mean,
especially
how frustrated
if it's breaking
must
down.
He, oh, absolutely. And how frustrated must he be? Just, you know, kind of the Dominic Cruz effect, I guess, you know, where you continually build yourself back only to be torn down again. Man, it's got to be just wear on you.
Well, if you're speaking about Dominic Cruz, that might not be so bad. Come back from injury and reclaim the belt. He might be like, hell yeah, let's do the Dominic Cruz thing. But, I mean, you're looking at Fabricio now, who has it. He's 5 years Cain's elder.
Yeah.
And one of the things he did mention in the presser is that he wanted to go 4 or 5 more years. So, you know, that's pushing him at what?
42
or something like that. So that's looking like, if you're taking Kane into that, that's almost 9 or 10 years. That's still a long time. So maybe, you know, the fact that even though we consider this his prime, you know, Fabrizio says he's in his prime now. So, you know, maybe in the heavyweight and some of these other divisions and some of these guys now, they're able to take their bodies so they can go further into the sport. So maybe it's not a big deal. But, you know, I think once you start getting to that point where your body starts breaking down and you're getting hurt this much, I don't think you have the regular longevity that maybe some of these other guys, you know. I'd be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it to 38 or whatever. Yeah, that puts a good 5 years. But going further beyond that, you know, if his body's breaking down now, the amount of, you know, torture that these guys put on themselves to maintain the top level that they're at, it's got to just be – It takes almost somebody of like superhuman strength or whatever for the body to not break down, you know? I mean, because these guys do. I mean, I don't think that the AKA trains bad or anything like that. You know, I know that people at one point were saying, you know, maybe guys were getting hurt there, maybe or whatever. But, I mean, look at the guys who are there right now with the belts. They're not facing injuries. Yeah. They're not facing whatever. So I don't think it's anything with the gym or whatnot. But, you know, I just go back to the fact that, yeah, you feel so bad for this guy because I've always appreciated him. I always thought he was, you know, very, very super nice. But, you know, what's interesting is that as he's come and times went and he's been out, you know, you start to see a different Kane now. I don't know if it's a matter of he feels time going as well or maybe he's got more of a chip on his shoulder now since the loss that – it's not the normal same, like, jovial, and maybe, of course, because maybe now he's more driven and he's focused, I got to get the belt back. But when you look, like, maybe even, like, a year or two ago at Kane and see how he was at UFC events and media things, he was more lighthearted, he was joking more and whatever, and I don't know if now it's a matter of he senses the clock, he senses the other thing, he's you don't get that sense of, like, I'm having as much fun as he used to do, you know? And, I mean, but I know when he gets in fight week, Kane's fight week Kane. And I'm not expecting to be cracking jokes and doing whatever. I'm just saying when I see him out in other days, it's not as lighthearted as
I thought about that, but I kind of agree with you. I think there's probably some frustration there.
Something going on.
I would agree. Well, so Kane Velasquez pulls out, then Stipe Miocic steps in, and then no sooner than that gets done than Fabrizio Verdum's out. And from what we've been able to gather and talking to people that I've talked to, I think the Stipe fight was kind of agreed to without anybody really consulting Fabrizio and making sure that he was in. Because as I understand it, and you got to feel kind of bad for Fabrizio Verdum, is that he was definitely hurt. And he was thinking, you know, I might have to pull out of this fight, but, you know, I'm going to try to gut through it. And, you know, from what I understand, you know, he was basically planning to try to go to the gym and go to the doctor and, you know, make sure he was okay. But there was a possibility over that weekend, this past weekend, that he was going to pull out. But he was trying to make it through the weekend and then make a decision at the beginning of the week. And in the meantime, Kane pulls out. And it's like, damn it. You know, like, if I'd have been the first one to pull out, it wouldn't have looked so bad, you know. But, you know, he had to make a decision. And I don't think you can fault the guy. If he was really hurt, like you said, he's you know, 38 years old now. He's he can't be messing around and risking going out there hurt and taking fights on short notice against late replacement opponents, a dangerous late replacement opponent in Stipe Miocic, and potentially risking his future earning power. It's not the most popular decision because I think we all like our fighters to be like, I'll fight anybody, anytime, you know, anywhere. Yeah. But, man, it is a business, and it is their career, too, and I think you have to understand why they make the decisions they make. I think he just ended up being kind of a victim of unfortunate timing because had he been the one to pull out and Kane was still in there, I don't think anybody would have said anything.
Yeah.
But the way it was handled and the fact that he did a very weird thing, which was, I don't know if everybody knows this or not, the way he announced this was he sent a group WhatsApp message to a whole bunch of Brazilian journalists, including our own Copperheart, Christian Stein, who's a Portuguese language speaker. He sent a group WhatsApp voice message and announced it to media members before telling the UFC.
Wow.
And I don't think that was a good decision on his part.
It seems like I don't know. It seems like we almost had a little something like that happen before with Jose Aldo leaking things to the media first. So I don't know if something's different down in Brazil. They figured that out to be a better mechanism, I guess. But it's just strange. And I mean, I don't know. I got no sense of it, you know, but I don't want to doubt. If he says that's what's up, that's what's up. I know that I did hear, I thought something, and maybe I'll go back and maybe we'll listen to it again. I swear when he was talking about it at the end, you know, they ask him, you know, well, what's after Kane? What's next? And he's like, I don't even want to talk about that. I don't want to think about it. You know, that's all the UFC. I know there's some other guys going, but I think he, and maybe it was just my wrong thing, he alluded to the fact that they had to take care of some things first. But one of the people he talked about was Stipe. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe having Stipe fight one of these other guys to see who would be the next person. So I think for Kane to drop out, and then he's already doing dealing with his own little injury, and then here's a guy that he's just like, in his mind's like, no, he needs to fight again before he's the next guy. I'm kind of injured, and now you're just going to pair me up with the guy? I don't agree with that. So I can also, too, see where he's just like, fuck that. No, I'm calling it out right now.
Yep.
Because, I mean, again, like you said, we expect them all to fight. We expect champs to fight. You know, you're the champion, you fight. If you can fight, you fight. You know, you don't pick and choose your favorite person that you're going to be in. You know, they line somebody up. But I'm sure it certainly didn't help if he has an injury that they're putting a guy that he thinks maybe should have had to fight again in front of him for him to just say, you know, let me sit back for a little bit, you know, and let them maybe work that out again, because now we can, you know.
If you go on to beat Kane, who would you prefer to fight?
Ah, no, I don't like when I say that, because I don't want to give it credit for the guys, you know, credit. Guys don't give credit for me, why I give it for, you know? And I asked to carry out a day, I say, I don't know, it's not dependent, it's not my decision, it's a UFC decision. It depends guys to the fights, you know. Imagine Travis Brown win this time. He win, but it's a terrible fight. It's no good fight, you know. And you think he have a chance for the title? Not, no, for sure not. Overeem, very nice knockout. Maybe him. But depending the guys too. How's the other guy?
Josh Barnett.
No, other guy is a fight versus Arlovski.
Oh, yeah.
Miotic. Yeah. Miotic have a good fight too, maybe. I think it's good fight Overeem versus Miotic. You guys fight each other. After then, we win. Maybe fight with me, you know, because for sure I'm staying with the belt.
I'm interested to see whether they put the fight back together or how they schedule things moving forward. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in the heavyweight division over the next couple of weeks and couple of months. So, something else that came out talking about putting fights back together. Dana White said on a radio show interview today that he was asked about putting the Jose Aldo Conor McGregor fight back together, and he basically made it clear, saying, "I don't think we can do that. You know, we put it together once, guy got injured. We put it together again, the fight goes 13 seconds. I don't think we can do a rematch." And of course, we know Conor McGregor has to fight Rafael Dos Anjos first, but should he go back to featherweight and defend that belt that he still owns, Dana's saying that, I don't think we can put that rematch together. And I got to say, I agree with Dana on this one, man. I don't think you can do – I really don't think you can do Jose and Conor McGregor again.
It's tough. I mean, for a while there, the going thing was like we're giving champs all the immediate rematches and whatnot. And you're right. I mean, that fight seemed to take forever for it to finally happen. And then to have the biggest collective blue balls after it finished before you even got a chance to get it wet, you know, to pass a phrase, you know. I mean, I'm not sad that it's not happening. You know, if anything, they realized that they had to stop giving those rematches because it was causing a chokehold on divisions and whatnot. You know, people weren't able to progress. Guys were having to fight way too much when they already should have been the contender and should have got their shot. So I'm not sad about that. And Conor's kind of distanced himself right now. The way he looked against Jose made Jose just look not old, but just afraid. And just he was slow and almost like he doubted himself. You know, when before the fight started, to see him not look up and to see him just staring at the ground like he wanted to be somewhere else. And just that's what I remember so much about that fight.
He's done that a lot during his career. Like, he does that thing where he just doesn't look at the guy.
Right? Yeah, but I mean, he just didn't even look at him the whole time.
Yeah, a lot of people thought the body language was off.
Yeah, he just sunk his shoulders. But you're right, you know, I mean, I'm sure that was part of his thing, but it didn't read to me like he was doing his thing. It read to me like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, I'm not sad about it. But, yeah, I mean, well, you've heard me about the fact that he's having to not defend his belt and gets to go up or whatever. I didn't agree with that, but I do like the fact that, I mean, RDA seems so excited about the fight. So I'm always excited when you get two guys that now there's some sparks flying between them that are amped up. I mean, there's nothing better than that, you know. And, you know, and the fact that, yeah, I love the fact that Connor is like, I'm the bigger guy. And I'm like, wow, you're right. He is. In the stat-wise, he's bigger than RDA, you know. And so you got guys that are like, well, he hasn't felt the punching of blood. I was like, but he's the bigger guy.
Yeah.
How do you know he doesn't already punch at that level right now?
Funny.
So I'm excited. I mean, fuck it. You know, I love the fact that there's going to be, you know, thousands and thousands of crazy drunken Irish people wherever Connor goes. They make watching a fight so much more fun. It's unreal.
They actually really do.
You know, so
it'll be interesting to see what happens with all of that, because, I mean, you know, I asked, if you'll remember back to that on sale press conference, I asked Connor, you know, hey, are you thinking about going up to 145? And he really didn't directly answer my question. He just said, I'm kind of thinking about going up to 170. You know, he didn't say, no, I'm not going to 145, but he sure didn't say, yes, I am. It was like, I kind of think that 170 belt sounds good. So, you know, who knows? Maybe he's not ever going to think about it. You know, I've heard people around him say they prefer him not to go back to 145 because the cut's just too hard.
Yeah.
You know, he has always publicly said, I will go back there. But it will be interesting to see what they do. I mean, you know, Frankie Edgar versus Jose Aldo, putting that fight back together for the belt that Connor gives up. I mean, cool, ugh. Right? I mean, that's cool, right? But it doesn't feel like you're just,
no.
I mean, especially for Frankie,
he's
you're
gotta
just like,
fucking fight for it once.
Dude.
Like, give Frankie the shot to fight whoever's holding him. Like, if he's gonna walk away from it, I mean, that's one thing. But then it just feels so shitty for Frankie.
Yeah.
And I wanna see that fight. Even if Connor wins in devastating fashion, give Frankie that shot. Don't make him have to fucking fight for some bullshit belt that was dropped to the floor and left, you know, like, he deserves it, and Connor needs to fucking defend that belt once. Don't fucking vacate it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, if that was your goal, I mean, I guess that's fine or whatever, and they could say he didn't lose at the thing. It just feels like a disservice to the guys that work so hard to get the belt that you're just gonna vacate it without even fucking losing it.
Well, it's weird, you know, the whole thing that, I mean, I don't agree when people say, well, you're not the champion until you defended it. You know, it's kind of a cliche or whatever. I don't agree with that. No, like, you won the belt. You are the champion.
Yeah.
But it would seem weird. I mean, like, imagine this. Let's say he beats RDA. And then he does, let's say, for whatever reason, the UFC says, yeah, we're going to let him go to 172. You know, we're going to let him do that. He goes up to 170, and he wins that title. And then, let's say, so then he has to get rid of two of the titles. So he gets rid of 145 and 155. And then he goes to defend the 170 title, and he loses it, you know? So, really, it's potentially possible that he could win three UFC titles, never defend one of them.
Yeah.
And then you're like, is this guy the greatest in the history of ever that he had three different – the first ever to get three different weight classes, hell, maybe even three simultaneously, depending on what they decide to do? Or do you go – the motherfucker never even defended one. He just won three fights in a row, and he happened to get the right fight in the right matchup. And I'm not trying to doubt, but all I'm saying – because, listen, I said I'm done doubting Conor McGregor, and I believe that. I'm done doubting Conor McGregor. The guy says he's going to go beat Fabricio Verdum. I'm with you, Conor. I guess you're going to beat Fabricio Verdum because everything he said, he's done. But I do wonder, because some of that stuff, the legitimacy of it, I think could get called into question depending on how this stuff all plays out. So – I think you're right. I think he does have to defend it a little bit somehow.
I would think. If not, I mean, they're doing what, you know, I had feared before, was like putting a stranglehold on these divisions, these belts, you know, just leaving a lot of questions. And I think, if anything, with this push to kind of create this media sort of frenzy and all this, it's setting history, I think you're also leaving the possibility of just sort of fucking the divisions up a little bit after it. You know, if they vacate them or just drop things, I mean, then you got people, oh, they're not really the champions. They're just the interim. They haven't beat the champ. The champ left it, and you got people right. This. So then now they start thinking worse about the current champs and the division and all this, and it just –
They can't let him go to 170, right? Because that's just – you're right. That would just be too much going on.
I mean, fuck it. If he gets the belt, you know, I mean, I would say, you know –
It would be pretty amazing, though, for a guy to be like he held titles in three different weight classes.
I mean, you figure he's got to walk around heavier than that. I mean, I heard he drops at least 25, 30 pounds to get down to whatever. So, I mean.
I would think 170, like, would probably be pretty close to his walk around weight, like 175, 180, something like that.
I would say, yeah. He there's times I see him and he looks like, yeah, he maybe 170 to 180 maybe. I mean, plus he's a muscle-packed dude, so.
It's dense.
They don't look their weight, you know. You look at him like, oh, he looks like he's like 170. He's like, oh, I'm actually 182 right now.
Right.
You can't fucking tell. But I know that, you know, dropping down how he has been, it's just – it's been rough on him. But it would still, you know, just let me down if he didn't ever actually defend that belt and just moves on beyond it, you know. Boy, he could really do himself some disservice. Go up 170, get the 170 belt, and they're like, well, you can't have all three. You got to give up. Give the one up in the middle, and then just really fuck around.
Like,
he's like, I'm that good. I could jump, you know, 20 pounds like no problem, you know. But.
It's interesting. You know, everybody's talking about that he's trying to make himself bigger than the company and that, you know, he eventually wants to promote his own fights. I don't think so. I understand the point that he's trying to elevate his own brand, and he definitely is, man.
Yeah.
He's definitely trying to make himself bigger than the UFC, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think that's smart. But I don't think he literally wants to hold his own fights and have to go through the nuts and bolts of, you know, filling up a card with preliminary fighters and securing venues. And, you know, I mean, like, I don't think he wants to do any of that. I mean, I know he'd have people do that. It wouldn't be like he'd literally be out there doing it himself.
Yeah.
But I don't think he wants to do that. But I think he does want to continue – to build his brand and command as much of the UFC's money as he possibly can.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I've seen people speculating that he wants to promote his own fights, and I don't know, man. Maybe I'm naive or call me crazy, but I don't think he wants to handle all that. I think when you've got this massive PR machine and this massive infrastructure that's built all around you that you can take advantage of, I think you just use that. And yeah, maybe you go, hey, I know this is what you normally pay, but I get more than that because I bring more to the table, and I don't think the UFC can argue with that.
No, that's true. But I don't know. I mean, I guess to counterpoint your thing, I could see him doing something, especially in Ireland or maybe some smaller mixed martial arts. I could see him, you know, maybe saying, hey, you know, I'll put my name up there. I mean, the thing about a guy like Mayweather, he's in a sport of boxing where, you know, what I've learned in the short few events that I've done in boxing is – There's no UFC in boxing.
Right.
There's these multiple promoters, and you'll have these fights that'll be a cross promotion. But you got
Golden Boy,
Golden
Top
Boy,
Rank.
And Top Rank. Yeah, they'll share a stage, and you got these two guys that are personas, you know, running these companies. But they have the people, of course, that do under. So I could see Conor, especially in Ireland, you know, say if they want to have a smaller thing, put his name behind a thing. Some couple gyms, he'll sponsor a couple gyms that'll go head-to-head, and it'll be the McGregor mashups or whatever sort of thing. So I can see him doing that. Do I think he ever wants to try to do something where he would compete against the UFC? No. But I could see him doing something because I think right now he's just building his – it's just brand. It's image. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just – it's smoke and mirrors, and he wants to talk a good game and do whatever. I don't think he would ever try to do anything to try to counter-promote against the UFC, but I could see him maybe – starting with some amateur promotion, you know, or starting with some amateur fights and maybe start building up some of the guys that haven't made it to the level and they need pro fights.
I could see him doing that at some point. You know? It's funny because I was thinking, like, wouldn't that be amazing? You know, he wants to fight in Croke Park so bad, and the UFC has been like, I just don't know if we're going to make this happen.
He might put it on the first fight.
I was going to say, well, you heard it at the press conference. I mean, even Conor was like, well, you have to understand it's a struggle, and I think he bought into it. Yeah, wouldn't that be some shit if he was the one that put on his own fight in Croke Park? I mean, that would be pretty amazing. But then you start thinking about it. I mean, you've been around the UFC long enough. I mean, the load-in that it takes to do these shows, I mean, a stadium show, the logistics that it takes to make it happen. Now, he can go hire an event company, an operations company, but what happens when they're like, hey, the lighting is going to cost $1 million for this show?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, is that a good price? Whereas meanwhile, the UFC can go, no, this is a $300,000 lighting project. Why are you trying to charge me $1 million for it? Like, I can they've done it 1,000 times. You know, that's the kind of stuff that just the inner workings of, like, when he's going to promote his own show. I just don't know.
Yeah, and one of the things I remember, I don't know if it was true or whatever, one of the things I always kind of heard was that, you know, all the money that, for the most part, the UFC takes in at the door, at the gate, you know, that pretty much is paying for the event, you know. So, you know, it's not like they're putting on an event and they're like, oh, we're going to make all kinds of money. It's like, no, you know, that pretty much, you just broke even for putting the event on. But then if you have a TV deal, you have sponsorship deals and stuff like that, you have other income that comes in. So, like, nobody's going to be – they're not going to get rich off putting these events on. You know, you got to have other things going. I think a lot of guys might be like, oh, you know, I want to start my own fights and I'm going to make all this money. And it's like, you don't understand the costs that are really associated with doing these sort of things, paying for the security, renting the place, like you said, setting up the house, you know, lights for the thing, chairs for the thing, you know, let alone if you want to try to – where are you going to air it? You're going to get some TV spots. You're going to try to do whatever. You know, there's all these costs that you never even think about till you try to put something on. So, it would be interesting, you know, if he tried to – because I think it would be an eye-opening experience for him. But I think if anything else, he's in the perfect front row to see how the UFC is doing it so he can – mop up all the thing, and he's got Dana's ear, he's got Lorenzo's ear. I guarantee, if anything, he's probably asking them the fine details, and I'm sure they're more than happy because it's keeping him evolved, keeping him around to kind of give him the tips and the clues as for what's going on. But if anything else, I mean,
I think they're gonna keep him cut in, man. I don't think they ever let him strike out, but we'll see. Somebody that may come back. You probably saw the reports today. A report came out in Canada that Georges St-Pierre is planning a comeback, and the announcement is coming soon. Quickly afterwards, his manager told a couple people that is not true. I reached out to Dana via text and did not hear back from him. Double check, make sure he hasn't texted me in the meantime. But I did not hear from him. So, you know, don't have one way or the other, but it sounds like no. I don't know, man. It's been 2 years, 2+ years since Georges fought. The heavyweight division right now seems more dangerous than ever, man. It seems like just legit. I don't know, man. Do you want to see George back?
I would. Did you say heavyweight?
No.
I think you said the heavyweight.
Did I say heavyweight?
I think
sorry.
You said heavyweight. I was like,
if I did, it had nothing unless, to do with why. Maybe because we were talking about so much heavyweight.
I know. I was like, wow. George, he can get fat in the offseason, I suppose.
If I did say heavyweight, I meant welterweight. That might have been
the
slight brown liquid that I have since consumed.
I think George, he's one of those guys that, you know, how can you not enjoy watching him? You know, he's a legend in the sport. I know I didn't like seeing him get kind of beat up and tossed around those last couple times. Maybe it really made him look human, and then the fact that now he's been out of the sport and guys, the sport's kind of grown up and sped up and kind of moved around him, and he's not as, I don't want to say unique, because I don't want to be like, oh, like George is just a regular, you know, fighter. I think he's got some crazy moves and he's got crazy skills, but George was, you know, you kind of look at, I like to think when I see Hoyce Gracie, I'm like, man, at one point, nobody could do what he do. And then you start seeing guys passed him by. And then, you know, then that guy was getting beat by guys that shouldn't be beating him. And I'd hate to see George try to come back if his heart's not really in it. I don't think he needs the money.
No.
But I just don't see him. I mean, I don't see him talking about it. I don't see him going out and really being at events, that's doing it. Things. He's been out and he's been away from it. I just don't think the same desire is there. Would I like to see him? Of course. You know, I mean, but fuck, I'm the same guy that fucking loves when it was like, oh, Kimbo and Kimbo and Shamrock, you know, I'm like, fucking whatever, bring it on, you know. But it is what it is. I mean, people will always watch St. Pierre. If he comes back, it'd be great, you know, but I just kind of in my heart of hearts think that I don't expect to see him back in the octagon.
I'm kind of with you, and I think because I don't think he has that fire and that drive, I don't want to see him back. Like, I think he was one of the few guys that walked out on top that, by all accounts, has plenty of money in the bank, so is doing good. And I think because of that, I don't want to see him back. I mean, dude, we've had some great fights in the welterweight division since he left. Like, not to – I mean, I'm not taking away from his greatness. He's one of the greatest mixed martial artists to ever live. And certainly the Canadian MMA scene that was so hot for a long time is not doing so great right now. There haven't been a lot of UFC events up there. I'm sure they would really appreciate him being back because he would certainly, you know, get attention from that country again and maybe kind of restart the scene there. But – I got to say, like, I'm kind of with you. I like what you said that I haven't really heard him talking about it a whole lot. There haven't been, you know, interviews where you're like, oh, God, I just have this fire. I have this passion. Yeah. Like, I don't know what reason he would have to get back in there. And I think because of that, I'm just like, dude, don't come in here and spoil what you built, man. You built a legacy. You built a reputation. And don't come back in here and spoil it.
Yeah. I mean, I think when after he first kind of stepped away and you'd see him cornering people and he was – at events, I had the feeling then, like, oh, I'm going to see him. I think he's going to come back, but I don't know. I mean, is he still cornering? I don't think I've seen him anywhere at an event, even just attending an event.
I mean, I know he was cornering Francis Carmon for a while, I don't think he's been cornering him since he's not in the UFC anymore.
No.
Maybe he has been.
I don't think he was there for his last fight, maybe when he finally was sort of his last one. Maybe he was. But you're right. I mean, I would see him there, and then it's just like now I'm like – I don't know. The fact that he's just not in the scene, and maybe, and you know, there were always whatever the reason. I don't know if we fully found all the reasons why he decided to really step away and do whatever. But yeah, like you said, I mean, if he's not there, I would rather let the memories of him in my head stay there, and not see that get tarnished by a unenthused. I wouldn't say out of shape because George, of course, is going to come
in shape. Always in shape, yeah.
But you know,
he's no Sage Northcutt.
He's no spring chicken. But you know, I would rather keep the memories in my head of him going out on top, leaving the game. You know, and I mean, I know he's still big up in Canada, like sportsly. Like, you know, you go out on the scene, George is still the man. You know, in the clubs and whatnot.
he's still hanging out at the hip hop clubs.
That's what I hear, but who knows?
Well, I'll tell you what. The other thing we did this week that I did actually this week was go out and see Josh Barnett in Los Angeles. Had a media luncheon out there, the same place that you had been with Fabricio Werdum just a few days earlier. Josh Barnett, of course, fighting at UFC on Fox 18. A big fight. A fight that I got to be honest, when the whole thing was going down with UFC 190 Slicks. 96 / UFC Fight Night 82. I thought the right plan would be to take Barnett and Rothwell, pull them off this Fox card, move them to Las Vegas next week as the main event, make it an interim title. I know that interim titles kind of suck, but I think you just throw it out there because it's a pay-per-view main event. Be like, injuries, we need an interim. You know what I mean? You can, because an interim title, I mean, at the end of the day, all an interim title really means is official number one contender. You know what I mean? But you can put a belt. You can put a belt on the poster. You can put a belt at the weigh-ins. And I really thought that was the move they would make. It sounds like, you know, whether or not they ever considered it or not, I don't know. But they definitely didn't ever talk to the athletes about moving it. But I thought that was one thing they could do. But Josh Barnett, we've played some clips from this launch, but I wanted to play kind of a longer portion of it. Josh was in rare form. He can be a little frustrating sometimes to interview because he's got this very dry sense of humor, and he likes to joke a lot. And if you don't know him, it's almost a little bit intimidating because it's almost like he's making fun of you. Like, his jokes are like – I mean, he doesn't really answer your question right, and he turns it on you, and you kind of – it almost sounds like he's, like, kind of disgusted by the question that you're asking him or whatever, you know. And I think the guy can be a little bit intimidating, but he was in rare form. He was having some great moments. There was one moment that I didn't put in this little section of audio, but I did put out on my Twitter account where Karen Bryant actually asked him what the worst injury he's ever fought with. Because what happened was we did this interview. We came in. We sat down. We did about half an hour worth of interview. Then the food got served. We ordered our food, did the interview. Then the food got served. And we still kind of had some questions, but we were like, hey, let's put it on pause so everybody can eat. You know, of course, you're videotaping. You don't want to videotape somebody interviewing, like, while they're eating, you know, just, like, mouth full of food and audio is, like, a lot of chomping and stuff, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't sound good. So we're like, hey, let's put this on pause. While we put it on pause was when we found out that Fabricio Werdum was out, you know. Yeah, so it was really bizarre how the whole thing happened, and we're like, oh, what's going to go on? So then we got to resume the interview with a fresh set of topics, yeah. You know, and whole things to talk about. But one thing that was asked was Karen Bryan actually asked Josh Burnett, what's the worst injury you've ever fought with? And he just right off the cuff says, a bent penis.
Oh,
and,
Jesus.
Yeah. Just, his comeback, everybody laughed, of course, and then his comeback to that was, it was very painful, but it gave me a different angle on life or something like that.
Well done.
So I put that on my Twitter account. But he was in rare form, so I did want to play a little bit longer section of this lunch because Josh Barnett, as you can see from his open workout where he put on a full professional wrestling display, can be one of the more creative and interesting cats in the sport. So as we refresh our copious amounts of glassware and cupware, and we have lots of options in front of us. As we do that, you can listen to the War Master, the babyface assassin, the former UFC heavyweight champion, Josh Barnett.
Well, Josh, we know we're here to talk about your fight, but we got to talk about the big news first, if you don't mind. What were your initial thoughts?
It's not mine. I never met her before. I have no idea.
The other big news, of course, that Cain Velasquez is out. Stipe in the heavyweight title shot.
He's out? Isn't he married?
Out of the fight. I'll try to phrase these a little more completely moving forward. What were your initial thoughts hearing that Cain Velasquez had to withdraw from the fight?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily classify him as fragile, but he has had a history of injuries in the past. And as anybody can tell you that competed in this sport or followed it closely, I mean, training is rough. Training is the hardest part of all of this in terms of the toll it takes on your body. And injuries are a fairly common thing. However, hearing that he had a back injury is actually pretty troubling. From an athletic standpoint, because you know, your back, your neck, those are some things that are really, really important, obviously, but they're also some of the hardest things to get over. And often a bad back injury means your career is done or surgery. So I don't know exactly the extent of his injury, and I hope it's not too bad. You wouldn't want to see a fellow athlete unable to ply their trade, at least in a manner that way. But what it does say is that the heavyweight division is wide open right now. Stipe, I think, will give a great fight to Verdum. Changes things quite a bit on strategy, but there are some similarities on how each fighter is going to approach this. But that means that myself and Ben, we're going to be looked at as what I believe the next contender for this fight. And the winner of this fight is going to have an incredibly strong position to claim for that spot.
I was going to ask, I mean, certainly I know you don't want to step over anybody or wish bad things, but I mean, does it kind of
I don't care about stepping over anybody. Are you kidding me? And plus, that has nothing to do with me anyways. If I get chosen, it's probably because of my comely haircut and my snappy fashion sense. But for whatever reason, if they choose me, it's going to be warranted. I held the UFC title once before, and I could hold it again. So I have plenty of credentials as why I should be fighting for a heavyweight title fight. And going out there and beating Ben is just gonna give them more incentive to do so.
I haven't heard what the extent of Cain's injury is either, but let's say it's just a couple months, a little rehab or something. I mean, he's been promised a shot. He's a former champ as well. But at this point, do you think it's, Cain, I'm sorry you had your chance, back to the line, buddy, or do you think there's a chance he could slip in there and still get a shot?
Well, I have no idea what the head office is going to make a decision on, right? I have nothing to do with that. But I know that I'm going to go out there and give the kind of performance that's going to warrant me getting that title shot over anybody else.
The last thing I want to ask you about Cain, I mean, obviously you're not inside his camp, but the guy's 33 years old, as you said, just mm-hmm. dealing with injuries. What would you do? I mean, you can't, you don't know what he's doing, but I mean, do you think it's, would you look at training first, like what they're doing at AK? Is it a situation where some guys' bodies just can't go through this?
Maybe he needs more probiotics. I would say eat more sauerkraut.
That'd be number one recommendation.
Yeah, number one. Yeah, definitely.
All of AKA, just more
sauerkraut. Just more kraut, more kimchis, you know, any sort of fermented veggies.
Fair enough. Well, I appreciate you talking about all that. Let's talk about your fight. Ben Rothwell, break the guy down. I mean, he's been around for a long time.
I intend to. Yes, mentally, emotionally. Well, made him where it hurts.
Well played. Well, what do you think about his game? I mean, a guy that's been around for a long time, has a lot of fights like you, hasn't necessarily accomplished what you've accomplished, but what do you think about him?
He's a big ogre, man, and he swings hard and often. He's proven his worth. He's got a fairly respectable record, and he's on quite a win streak, which I think is probably the most important part of when you look at Rothwell's legacy is what he's been doing over these last four fights. So, I mean, this is a guy that did lose to Mark Hunt on the ground. So, you know, he has negatives. Hey, so do I. I've had my moments where I didn't perform at my best. But I think that Ben Rothwell is going to show up the best that he's ever been, arguably. And he's looking to build upon what must be a lot of confidence coming into this fight. But I've seen Ben at his worst. I've seen it before, and I think I can bring it out of him. Without alcohol and drugs. Just through being a sportsman at this point.
People talk about striking, but I mean, you've been there with guys like Caratana, Vival, Hizo, I mean, top-level strikers.
Yes.
How does he compare to those guys? Can he? Because it seems he's got
the power. He's more like a less refined Caratana. He doesn't have a lot of the technical refinements, but he's got a hellacious chin, and he's got one-punch knockout power, which is dangerous. The fact that you can get out there and just get full on delivering punches to his face and just keep scoring and be... You can be falsely encouraged to keep going to town on him. And all of a sudden, one shot comes and hits you behind the ear, like with Overeem, or, you know, he just swings blindly and hits you in the chin like Schaub. I mean, that's, you don't want to lose that way. Also, because when you watch a replay, you're like, good God. Man, he must have hit me by sense of smell, because he wasn't looking anywhere he was going. But what that does say is, you know, he hits as hard as he looks like he does.
Yeah. You mentioned where the winner will stand in the title picture. I wonder, where does the title rank for you in terms of, like, importance? I mean, you've got your commentary going on. I know how much you love training and you know, coaching and that sort of thing. So you've got these other passions in your life other than just fighting. Where does that heavyweight belt regaining that title, where does it rank in terms of your life?
I'm not doing this to be mediocre. So winning that belt is exactly why you get in the ring and why you go on these paths, so that you can get those opportunities, so that you can be the champion, so that you can be number one. And I've been number one before. I can be number one again. And to go out there and come back around after, was it like, I don't know, 14 years or something crazy, I don't think that's something anybody has ever done. And to regain the title at my age. And to go out there and prove what I believe in and prove what my coaches believe in as far as training concepts too, so.
Did you appreciate it enough the first time around, or do you have regrets that maybe you didn't?
No, I appreciated it, but it felt, I don't know. I think the second time around, I'll probably have still some of the same feelings as far as, you know, it belongs here. Like, of course, I'm the champion again. What else should I have expected? You know I can win title belts. I know I can beat anybody in the world, so. It was a great moment at the time. It would be a great moment again, and it would be a hellacious thing to add to my legacy.
So you were out for almost 2 years before the Roy fight in September. Do you feel like a new fire? Because I know you have a lot of things going on. You're doing the commentary, you have movies, but do you feel like a new fire fight after that Roy fight?
No, not necessarily. I just feel like everything in your life is connected to some degree, and. You know, for me, it's about trying to move ahead and move forward and improve and grow constantly as a human being. This is part of that. Now, this is something I've been involved with for a very long time, something I put a lot of energy into. But, you know, it's not enough to just win in fighting and to grow in fighting. I have to grow everywhere. So, according to my girlfriend, anyways. So, I just need to... Keep moving forward and keep building upon this. As the success will continue in the gym and in the ring, success will continue in other ways too.
Was there any point during that time off they thought, I don't really need to come back, I have all these other things going on?
Well, I feel like that all the time. I don't need to do anything. Yeah. As far as in your typical sense. I need to do it because I need to do it. I need to go out there and fight and get the most out of my athletic opportunities and go out there and win that title back for myself and do those sort of things. But need. I could just quit fighting. I could leave this and go, hey, thanks for the ribeye. I'm done. And I got plenty of things to keep me busy.
Right.
You know, fighting is not the only thing in my life. And it never was the only thing in my life. But I have other pathways if I have to ply a trade. And I wouldn't be sad about doing these other things either. You know, I enjoy them as well.
So what motivates you to keep going? Is the title? Is
caffeine.
It
had a decent amount of caffeine this morning to be as sharp as possible. I don't know how effective that's been so far, but the day's not over yet.
How important is that to have
caffeine? I don't know, man. It's pretty up there. I am from Seattle.
Now, like you said, that fighting hasn't been like the number one thing controlling your life for the last 10, 12 years. Like, is that important? Like,
personal motivation. Your own reasons for doing whatever it is, your raison d'etre, whatever you've decided how to approach life and how to accomplish it and how to conquer it, that is it. And fighting is a part of it. And what it requires is unique to itself as well as anything else you do. So it's not just time invested towards mastery of something. It's everything has its own process. Well, fighting's process takes a very, very focused focused as part of your life, because someone's going to go out there and try to beat you up. You know, this is not the sort of thing like, you know, that I don't quite have my macros down for Final Cut, so it takes me longer to edit it. It's okay, it takes you longer to edit it, but no one's going to come up if you don't do it in 15 minutes and wallop you in the face with a baseball bat. That would make you a little more focused towards getting that process down. And if you could actually figure out all the ways on how to use Final Cut, I think you would probably be the only person in the world to really. I don't even know how people use Photoshop, man. That stuff is completely foreign to me. Adobe make great products, but it takes like an electrical engineer just to figure out how to open the manual, it seems like. So for me, you know, fighting is something I started with. It was a huge passion of mine, and it still is, and I always wanted to be the best fighter in the world. I always wanted to be the best Josh Barnett as a fighter I could be too. So you know, I have to put the efforts into it to achieve those goals, but at the same time I have to put those efforts towards being the best me as a person I could be. And I know that sounds like some sort of a general platitude or something you read in a shitty book like The Secret, but and it is shitty. You can't just will things into your life. That's just an idiotic thing. The guy probably also thinks that everything happens for a reason, which it doesn't. Yeah. Or it does, and that the reason was because I made it happen. I picked up the bread and ate it. Fuck, man. So I have to, you know, whatever potential that lies within me is there, but not unless I put the effort into it, unless I put the work into it, unless I put the energy into developing those things, however that path may come. And so I've only got so much time on this earth, and then that's it. So I better make the most of it. Right now, fighting is pretty much number one in my life. But I guess, honestly, it's number two to being just the best me that I can be.
Back to the MMA Roadshow. That was Josh Barnett. We've been in Vegas a lot lately. If you're a newer listener of the show, you may say, what the hell they call this thing the Roadshow? They're always at home in Las Vegas.
But you did get on the road to come over to my house.
That is true. That is true. We did do that. We're typically on the road a lot more, and we're going to be on the road a lot more. Next week, we will not be. Of course, it is I wanted to say UFC 196. UFC Fight Night 82. Johnny Hendricks versus Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. We'll be doing that. The World MMA Awards are next week. That'll be after we record the show, though. That's next Friday night. But that is something that's coming up. Are you going? Did you finally decide?
I got to get
going?
A suit.
You got to get a suit?
I got to get a suit for that, man. I want to kind of represent, you know.
Gotcha. I took mine to the dry cleaners. I'm ready to go.
See, I'm like, ugh. Because I don't really do suits, you know.
Right.
And, but, yeah, no, I need to, you know, maybe – put some money down and get me like one good suit. You know, I need like a black suit or something.
I mean, you don't have to go to like I'm not gonna Conor do like McGregor's a tux, guy. No. Anything, yeah, jeez.
I'm like, can I have one sock, please? They'd be like, can I and can I do installment payments? But no, I'm thinking about it because I think it'd be fun and different, you know. And I think if fans of the road show and fans of the Junkie Nation, you know, can kind of put it together, be neat to
are you asking to buy you awards? A
suit? Oh. No. Yes, you all can definitely pitch in for my suit. I'll start a GoFundMe to get
go
me,
dress me.
Go dress me. But no, if you know, since MMA Junkie is up in the running for the you know best MMA outlet, so it'd be interesting and nice if they did it, so I can have a suit to maybe come up there with you, so I can watch you give a speech. And you know, if should you fall ill, I practiced my imaginary speeches. I have a couple.
That'd be great. I'm just gonna turn it over to you. I'm just gonna walk up there and be like, point over to you. Like, I'm not saying I'm too drunk to say anything.
So no, it'd be good because yeah, I've never seen it. You know, even the years I worked at the UFC, we didn't have to cover it or anything, and I never actually went, so I have no idea what to expect.
They're fun to go to, man. I know some people bag on them, whatever, but it's fun to go to. Everybody is wearing their suits. Everybody's dressed up, you know, something you don't typically see. And, yeah, fingers crossed, man. MMA Junkie is nominated in the Best Media Source category, and fingers crossed, man. I definitely would love to see our team win that. So hopefully we'll have some fun there. So we'll still be in Vegas next week. Now, the week after that, the day that we record the show will actually be a day that you and I both travel out to Los Angeles for the day to interview Anderson Silva and Michael Bisping at an open workout. So I think we'll have to the way the day is going to work out, I think we'll probably end up recording some of this stuff from the gym, probably some of it from the airport. So that'll be some road show. And then after that, things get busy again. We'll be in Houston for Bellator 149. We did just find out this week that you are newly confirmed to go to London at the end of February.
Yes. Yes, Gavda.
For UFC Fight Night 84. Then we'll be back in Vegas, of course, for UFC 196, Dos Anjos versus McGregor. And then, Invicta's the week after that. Maybe we'll do something around that. Then you and I will both be in Australia. So things are going to get busy. We haven't booked Croatia yet, but I think we're both planning on being in Croatia as well.
I would like to be there.
I think I should just go ahead and book it before anybody else asks. Like, sorry, dude. We already paid for the plane.
Sorry.
My bad. I'm sorry.
I said
was that not what we all agreed on?
Like, hey, yeah. I mean, you guys took the Newark trip. I mean, fuck. I mean, once you took Newark, I said, fuck it. I'm going to Croatia. Austria.
I mean, if they took New Jersey, I guess we're going to Croatia.
You know? Fuck.
Yeah, so the road show will get back out on the road very, very soon. A lot of that stuff is going on. Other thing that this past week, I guess, that happened, Ronda Rousey did appear on Saturday Night Live. I got to say, a lot of people were hating on her. I thought she did fine. I don't think she's winning any awards or anything for her acting. But I thought she did okay. And you know, I saw a lot of people saying, I still do watch Saturday Night Live a little bit. I mean, I don't watch every single episode. I kind of just watch the guest hosts, the Weekend Update, the music acts, if it's somebody like, you know, I mean, I still record it on my DVR. I don't watch every single scene every week, but I record it and skim through it. I thought she did okay, man. I thought she did a bad, not a you know, again, an award-winning job, but not a bad job. And I think it's cool to see a former UFC champion, a top UFC superstar hosting Saturday Night Live. I mean, to think that she lost in the way that she lost, and she's still breaking down barriers.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool, and there was one scene. It was bullies against mixed martial arts. I mean, where they actually, you know, on a couple different graphics on the screen, had mixed martial arts and said mixed martial arts, not just UFC, but, you know, the whole sport itself. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good point of discussion. You know, here's an athlete that, you know, she's definitely opened up so many avenues for herself. You know, people have looked at her as, one, she was this outstanding athlete, but then also as an attractive woman, was getting these movie deals, and, you know, she was starting to cross over all these barriers that a lot of people were just like, oh my gosh, we've never seen a fighter do this, you know. But it's interesting because, you know, when I was thinking about even the roles, you know, and it just kind of popped in my head, you know, a lot of people wonder, can she act? Can she do? I mean, the roles that she does in the movies, it's, of course, it's usually action-based. She's throwing somebody over her car or breaking somebody's arm or doing something along those lines. And then here's another situation where it's sketch comedy. Comedy is very, very tough.
And live sketch comedy.
You know, and trying to be the timing. But then, you know, when I was thinking about some of the roles that I mean, granted, I didn't watch the whole thing. I just kind of picked and choose through different ones. But most of the roles that I saw, she was playing this, like, sexy woman.
Right.
You know, she's either a teacher where they, molested some student where there wasn't a lot of dialogue, just kind of just being like, oh, this guy, and you know, whatever, and just kind of do it. So I'm thinking, okay, playing off her looks, not really giving her much to say. Another one was like a bachelorette, you know, sort of thing where it was just all these girls
rotating through,
playing for the affection. So here I'm thinking like, okay, well, they're definitely trying to keep it about the looks or trying to keep it about whatever, but also keeping the dialogue small or whatever. So it started making me think a little bit, you know, so like, yes, she is an MMA fighter, you know, that has crossed this barrier, but it's also more like they were like, yes, come do it, but we're coming because you're an attractive woman. You're in the moment right now. So here, play roles that cater off your looks.
Well, I did watch the whole thing. I watched the whole episode, and I did think the funniest scene that they did was, it was basically all jokes about the racial inequality at the Oscars. You know, this whole thing.
Oh yeah, it's been big.
You know, big discussion. There's not enough, you know, people of color nominated or whatever, and this, the whole joke was like, you know, they would show like the clip, and they were like, in this movie, and it would be like a black actor, like turning in like the performance of a lifetime, being all dramatic, and then like a white person would be on the phone and be like, you know, they get the nomination. You know, it's just like funny. Like the final one was like nominated for the role of white guy with camera, and it's like the African warlords and things that's going on. This dude like walks into the scene. He's like, oh, he walks back out. Like he's the guy that gets nominated for the award. And I was like, okay, that's pretty good. That's well written.
Yeah.
But Rhonda's role in that was literally just sitting in the audience. She was like the girlfriend of one of the nominees. So I mean, she didn't even have one single line. So it was weird. I mean, but again, she's not an actress. She's an athlete. So I mean, yeah, I'm sure they purposely kept her role to a minimum.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
tough. Comedy is really, really tough, especially at the level
as
of the
we
people
prove
that,
on a weekly basis.
Yeah. Right. You know what I mean? But the guys that do like the whole SNL, a lot of them came from like Second City and a lot of these like these sketch improv comedy things. And that's like the real deal. There's no joke about that. Like, it's tough for anybody, even a seasoned actor, to try to do it. So the fact that she was at least trying, you know, I mean, maybe they did try. I hope they at least gave her a shot and then maybe just said, all right, well, maybe it's not working. Maybe do it. Or maybe she even just said, hey, I'm just happy to be here. Put me in something. And, you know, they don't have a lot of time to prepare for these things.
Schedule's insane.
A lot of the decisions had to either be made, what's the best use we can do just so we can put her in the scenes and do whatever. You know, I don't think anybody was expecting an Oscar performance or anything. But, you know, I'm glad that she still was there, though. I mean, it's still saying that's history right there. I mean,
it's still cool. You know, I think it's still – she's still – helping get the sport out there, and I think that's cool. And you know, I guess you know, to see her kind of start rebuilding herself a little bit and get herself back out there in the public is good to see. I still think she would struggle to beat Holly Holm today. I don't know what she's been doing in the meantime, but I still think she would struggle to beat Holly Holm. So I'll be super interested to see what they do with her when she is ready to come back. We know it's not going to be UFC 200, but man, I think I hate to say a warm up fight because nothing's guaranteed in the UFC. But I don't think you throw her right back in there with Holly Holm, even if it's UFC 205 or UFC 210 or whatever it is. Man, I feel like you want to get her like one more fight.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Misha's booked, or I'd say give her Misha.
Ah, that's wrong.
No. I'm kidding. I love Misha. But yeah, no, she needs a warm up. I mean, especially even now, here she is. She was dealing with, I think she was pretty severely depressed too after that loss.
Sure.
And then now to start getting herself back, and then now she's been doing SNL, she's still been doing some press stuff, and she looked, I mean, I don't know, there's no polite way to say it without it coming off wrong. I mean, she looked out of shape for the SNL thing. She looked.
She's a big girl, man.
She's a big girl.
I think what people do is they get that picture of her on the scale in their head. That's not her.
That's not her. No, no,
that
no.
That is not her.
By no means. No means.
And yeah. I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, I've.
That's every fighter. That's across the board. Fighter. Female, anything. You see them on the scale, they don't look that way any other day.
It's
of
just
the week.
Wrong. Yeah, yeah. It's like, but for whatever reason, it's like a dude gets on the scale, like, oh man, sunken in. That must have been a tough cut. A girl gets on the scale, and you're like, damn. You know what I mean? Like, it's so sad, but it's true.
Yeah. I don't know. It just looked to me like she hadn't been. Train. I mean, granted, she doesn't have a fight or anything lined up, so it's not like I expect her to be in the gym. If anything else, that's probably her body probably needed that too, just to kind of get away from it and just focus on other things. But it just looked to me like the gym hasn't been where her focus is, the training or whatever, which maybe was part of the whole dealing with whatever depression she immediately got after the fight. You know, because I think. She went from the highest of highs, and probably in her own mind, she's very tough on herself. And I think when she got that loss, she was also very tough on herself, you know. And, so it's good to see her out and about doing her things. And, you know, I don't know. I don't want to even bring up the I was reading again about, because when I was reading the Saturday Night Live scene, Travis's almost ex-wife, because they're still working on getting the whole divorce thing, you know. Was talking about Rousey, was jumping in, but I don't know, this isn't the time place, and it's just so fucking tiring to try to talk about whatever crazy relationship stuff's going on there. And I mean, who knows what's going on with all that stuff. So yeah, Ronda's been dealing with a lot of other stuff, but going back to Saturday Night Live, good for her. I mean, that's a tough fucking thing. I think anybody would look maybe a little bit silly trying to jump into that level of stuff. So I know I wouldn't look natural in going up in there. So good on her for having the balls to fucking put herself out there. I mean, that's tough. I mean, but, you know, I think she's used to being in the front of people. So good for her.
Being in the front of people?
Being in front of people.
Oh, okay. I don't think that's what you said.
Maybe I didn't, but I meant being in front of people.
Okay.
What did I say? Being the front of people?
I think you said being in the front of people.
Being in the... That doesn't even mean anything. It's just...
All right.
It's just brown liquid talk.
Oh, that sounds even worse. All right. Well, as you can tell by this time of the night, it's time to shut things down. We're going to try to do some post-fight content for UFC on Fox 18, even though we're not there. I think people chimed in and said they'd love to hear some, you know, post-fight analysis and some thoughts and see what we can do. So we're down to do that. What are we gonna do? Are you gonna get with me to watch? Are we gonna watch the fight somewhere? Or?
Well, that's what I was just telling you about how I was shooting some of the archery stuff for the Olympics thing. So that's Saturday and Sunday. So if anything, maybe Sunday.
Well, I might be
flying
solo. We'll see how it goes.
But no, I'm definitely down. I mean, you're gonna be watching the. But depending on when I get done. Because I'll be at the South Point, which is down in your neck of the woods.
That's true.
So maybe we can meet up somewhere and watch it. Or I was thinking about coming here. Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, doing it for USA Today Sports. Hey, gearing up for the Olympics.
Olympics, baby. You know, I mean, it's Americans hopefully taking on and beating some foreigners. Win America. Go to America. Go America.
Ignorant Americans. Good job. All right. Well, so that's kind of what we got in the leg. Like I said, we've got a lot of stuff coming up over the next couple weeks and months. So we've had a good time at home in Las Vegas for a while. I know I've spent some time with my family. Wednesday was my wife's birthday, so I actually got to take a couple days off and hang out with her and enjoy that. So it's been nice to have a couple weeks at home. But I'm ready to get my ass back out on the road, man. I'm ready.
Let's do this
like we do. We're going to start – flying across some continents pretty soon, so I'm excited to kind of get that going again.
Yeah, can't wait, man. Ready. Even that trip to LA, I was just like, fuck, it's already almost end of January, and I haven't been on a fucking plane. I'm like, let's do this, man.
I know, man. I'm addicted to travel. It's the worst. When I'm at home, I want to be on the road, and when I'm on the road, I want to be home, man. It's the life, but nothing I love better than getting out there, getting to the fights, and getting to talk to all these athletes, and then getting to jump on here and talk some MMA. So we're going to wrap things up, finish up a couple frosty beverages, and enjoy UFC on Fox 18. We'll come to you this weekend, and as always, thanks for listening.
Well, 40 minutes.
Yeah, the way I had set it up, because we didn't have a ton of audio this week, I figured I want to do a long section where it's just like a whole bunch of stuff, and then the last one's like super, super short, actually.
Ooh, brown liquid.
Yeah, that's why I sipped mine. Oof. All right, we're good.
Irish whiskey. Oof.
Yeah, that's why I sipped mine.
Kind of brings tears to your eyes. All right.
Good?
Yep.
Can I wait for the frosty beverages? Or just,
oh, yeah. No, just we can wait for a frosty beverage. Frosty beverage and a shot?
We can have a shot while we're going, I guess.
Yeah.
All right.
What's the worst injury you fought with?
Bent penis.
Shit.
It was the worst injury, but it did give me a new creative angle on life.
Is that your mighty little buddy?
After this, I feeling I'm in the best, you know. I feeling this for sure, but I don't wanna say all the time, like, you know, because I think like you say a lot of time this, and the guys watch this video, maybe the guys, yeah, his guy's like arrogant guy, you know, cock guy. I don't wanna see the same guy, you know, Luke Rowe, yes. I put my Instagram hashtag. How's it?
Rockhold. What did you say?
Cockhold.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. That's terrible.
Yes.
Yeah. Great.
Hashtag. Cockhold. Cockhold. Yes. Cockhold. I don't like it.
Thank you, sir. I wasn't even gonna go there. I talk about like Virgin, but you know, I was like, oh yeah. I don't know, living up in the dorms, man. I'd be like, yo, bro, I'm going to put my, like, sock on the doorknob or something.
I'm just kidding. He's laying pipe everywhere.
I bet he is. If he isn't, my God, son, we're going to have a talk. That would be the naive part. Dude, I'd be fucking smashing shit if I was in this predicament. Dude. Oh, the dorms. I actually did.
You want to fuck?
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. That was.
Thank you. Want a bone?
I'd really appreciate it. Thank you very much for letting me put my penis in you.
Thank you.
You sound like Mickey Mouse.
Thank you.
She's used to being in the front of people.
I'm pretty sure that's what you said.
I did, but I guess it doesn't really mean anything. I just meant like she's used to being in front of people. Like in the...
Oh, it definitely doesn't mean anything, but it sounds funny.
It does sound funny, but I'm like, is that a naughty phrase?
I think it was.
Is it?
What? No. Well, I mean, it just depends.
Anything I didn't say she's used to being bent over with people. To like... She's used to being bent over in front of random strangers. I did not say that.
Thank God.
So,
oh, right. Terrible.
Fuck.